Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast. I have run. I have crawled. I have scaled these city walls. These city walls. Only to be with you. But I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Oh, there it is. It's the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Hello, listener. Welcome to this, the latest punnet of freshly picked UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's best low-fat weekly tech podcast, neatly sliced into your head every Friday like a stone remorselessly working its way into your shoe. The UK Tech Weekly Podcast is an infotainment suit of armour from the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK and Computerworld UK. Every Friday, we head off to an audio beach, using audio buckets and audio spades to build audio sandcastles, soon to be destroyed by a cruel and unforgiving audio sea, in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. Do not forget to subscribe, review, and tell your friends. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in conversation by the town crier of tech, Chris Martin, Consumer Tech Editor of PC Advisor.
Hello.
The Billy Liar of Tech, Scott Carey, Online Editor of Techworld.
Hello.
And the Danny Dyer of Tech, David Price, Acting Editor of Macworld UK.
Did I ever tell you I interviewed him?
No, you did not.
I must have loads of time.
Yes, you did. This week we are talking No Man's Sky, emoji and banking. Aloha. Ain't no other man, it's true. All right? Ain't no other man but you. Chris Martin, what is the deal with No Man's Sky? Do your thing, honey.
I wish you'd sung that, but No Man's Sky is...
Is that a song?
Yeah. Ain't no... All right. Ain't no other man, it's true. Ain't no other man but you. Do your thing, honey.
It's Christina Aguilera.
It is indeed Christina.
I don't know about these pop music.
Aguilera. The... thinking person's Britney Spears.
What a great
Chris Martin
tagline. No Man's Sky is a brand new game which is now out on PlayStation 4 and as we publish this podcast will be out on PC. There is no Xbox version, sadly.
Ha!
Wow, that's not kind.
And it's kind of set to be one of the biggest games of the year. It's this huge space exploration game, which is basically limitless. The game makers haven't even been able to explore the whole thing themselves.
What? How does that
work? I saw
work?
The figure 14 quintillion planets.
Yeah,
the other
that's
day.
A made-up number.
Something yeah, like that, yeah.
If you found one planet every 1 second, it would take you 500 billion years. To see them all.
How is that possible?
It's just procedurally generated. So it's sort of not... They haven't designed it themselves. They've just generated algorithms that then produce a new planet each time somebody discovers a new planet.
So traditionally, you'd make a game and you'd design the levels of a game and you'd set... You know, there'd be edges where... Yeah. Almost like Truman Show, where you'd get to the edge and it kind of looks like you might be able to jump over a little barrier, but...
Which is actually how... real life works,
yeah.
Right, so it's,
but it's actually the edge of the level, and you can't, yeah. You know, you can jump and crouch and whatever as much as you like. You're not going to go any further. In this game, it basically, like David said, it generates itself, so you can.
That's fascinating.
You fly around in your spaceship, and you'll find new planets and.
But can
all
you
sorts.
Play with other people? So if I generate a new planet, does that exist only in my instance of the game?
This is one of the
big questions.
Kind of big questions. Two players have discovered the same planet, and they have clarified that everybody playing it is in the same universe.
Right.
But the chances of finding somebody else are next to zero.
Right.
But two players on Reddit have found each other.
Well, that's what they always underestimate gamers. They're always, it's very unlikely. Of course, people will put in so much time that they immediately find each other.
So you don't, on PlayStation, so it's been out on PlayStation as we talk, not on PC just yet, but on PlayStation, you don't need the PlayStation Plus subscription, which you would normally need to pay for to play a multiplayer game online with other people, but you don't need that for No Man's Sky because it's not really a multiplayer game.
Right.
So they're kind of treating it as a single-player game, but you can find other people.
Wow.
So these two guys have found it, like, realised that they both discovered the same planet, and then thought, okay, let's set up a meet. Let's meet each other on this planet. Tried to do it, and they were both there at the same time and couldn't see each other.
Ooh.
So it's a bit kind of confusing.
It's kind of cool, though, because it's like parallel universes within the same game.
But you
potentially, I don't think that's the idea, though.
Well, it's, yeah.
It, so one, they, it was nighttime for one of them. It was daytime for one of them. They were seeing the same buildings and the same like things on the planet.
Yeah.
But couldn't see each other.
And if you land on a planet that somebody else has found, like when you discover a planet, you get to name it if you're the first person.
What would you call your planet?
Willy Land.
Graham's planet.
Obviously. Graham's planet. Yeah, that'd be good. David's planet. So if somebody else goes there, then they do see, oh, this is Willy Land. But then they can't find Mr. Willy on the planet. It seems at this
point. We've all been there.
But hopefully this is something they could implement in the future. Because it's a bit lame. If you somehow, defying mathematical probability, manage to find somebody and then you can't see them, it's a bit of a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, but technologically this sounds extraordinary, this idea of... I mean, is this the first time anyone's created, and in fact, apart from God... an infinite universe?
The great video game designer in the sky.
Well, I mean, philosophically, maybe we are part of a game like that.
They say that statistically it's more likely that we are than we're not.
Statistically. You can prove anything with statistics.
Yes.
I don't think anybody's made a game as big as this, but there are quite a few sort of procedurally generated games. Like the game I always bang on about, FTL, is randomly generated as you go along. It's a very small game, but you explore space, and then when you go to a new part of space, and it'll go, oh, here's a planet, and they wouldn't have known what was going to happen. It would just be generated according to random algorithms.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing is very now in game design.
Wasn't there a game, an unfortunately named game, RimWorld, an online game? Check it out. I believe that is...
Sounds
like,
excellent.
Well, it was famously like... a huge space game, but that maybe these days that's considered pretty small. You know, so relative to things like Grand Theft Auto and stuff, this is just like a whole other level of open world play.
Yeah, I think GTA 5 was massive.
Yeah,
like many times bigger than even like the previous GTA.
I'm trying to remember how they set
even
the weird...
Even that had limits.
Yeah, how did they set up the weird Truman walls on that? Obviously you had the sea.
It would be something like the sea, and there'd be a bridge to the next part of the game, and there'd be a mysterious roadblock on the bridge.
Yeah, because it was LA, wasn't it?
So, like yeah.
I'm trying to think how they blocked off the land side.
But it was always an interconnected sort of islands, and if you swim too long, then you die. That's the usual sort of tactic.
Yeah.
It's really, really lame in games when... you go up to the barrier and there's just an invisible wall and it goes, you are leaving the playing area. And it's just, come on, put a bit of thought into it. Yeah.
Well, this is interesting, again, though, because I suppose with games like GTA, that requires thousands and thousands of hours of development work to create this huge world, whereas what is happening in No Man's Sky is, as you say, there are a set of rules that are created, but then infinite things.
But there does seem to be an overriding story.
Right.
And, you know, we don't want to give away what happens, and none of us are, I think, in a position to give away anything anyway. But there is a story, there is a secret, there is something to do with the centre of the universe.
Yeah, is that the aim of the game, to get to, like, coordinate zero?
But they're being really secretive about it.
As far as I've seen, there is no storyline and there is no objectives.
It's just
exploration. Like
Star Trek.
I get the feeling it'll be a bit Matrix-esque, where there is, like, a central mystery, but whether you want to... Whether you can get at it easily is going to be quite tricky. But they'll basically, I reckon, be like a man in a room at the end that will explain why there randomly are sentinels on every planet. That, like, that seems to be the only constant, yeah, that there's these like weird like robots on every planet. So there's definitely some overriding sort of
logic to that. Otherwise, universe. You could, you know, rush home in the car, sitting in traffic, in order to sit in a spaceship and fly around for hours.
Which is worrying.
This is kind of why I don't, like, I'm not fussed about getting it and playing it. Cause it's like,
but you're one of the world's leading experts on this game.
I know. But
it's going to take over your life, though, isn't it? That's the issue.
I just, like, when I had Skyrim,
I
need, like,
I played
objectives
Skyrim constantly. And that was an authored world that was had limits, and it was just like one continent. And I spent all the time playing all the subplots in that. I think there's going to be subplots sort of storylines in No Man's Sky. And you go around and you just randomly happen across, you know, some goblin or something, and he has a mission and all the rest of it. And you can get stuck in that for just months and months. And this game, it's going to be like Better Than Life. Yeah. Remember in Red Dwarf?
Yeah.
It's going to be like, why would I, you know, if especially if they get a VR version of this, imagine that. Just never ever leave the game room.
I think the cool thing about it is that it's a tiny little studio in Guildford in England. It's a British game, isn't it?
It's an indie developer, but Sony has kind of treated it like an in-house studio. So they've had a lot of, like, they've picked up on the development and given them they've put a lot into it, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is quite cool.
It's an amazing story that their previous game was Joe Danger, which is like a sort of small budget,
awful
little racing. Well, it's a good
Danger
game.
Danger should be our middle name.
Well, it doesn't. You know, maybe his name is Joe Danger Price.
Could be.
But that's like a really small scale, really nicely constructed little racing sort of stunt game. It was a big success on iOS, and then they've gone from that to what is basically the biggest game in the world. But I mean, both in terms of size, but you know, in hype,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just huge.
So there is a lot of hype. There has been a lot of interest on the site. What about you guys? It sounds, David, like you might potentially be tempted to play.
I haven't got a PS4 or a PC. And
ha!
So again, that's not kind.
Scott is full of schadenfreude today, isn't he?
He really is. I always, you know, every week I talk about this. I do my gaming on an iPad, and it's never ever going to come out on the iPad. So I'm sad. I'm already thinking I might buy the. What's the next Wii one called? The Wii U?
The NX.
NX. I might do that to play the new Zelda, but then that's not going to have No Man's Sky in it. No way. So I'm not going to be playing it. I'm just going to have to miss out.
Scott?
No chance. Like, I bought Metal Gear. The last proper game that I bought. So I play a lot of sports games. I play a lot of sort of FIFA and NFL and stuff like that. But the last proper game I bought was Metal Gear Solid, and I've played all of about an hour of it. And that takes about, I think, 40 hours to complete. So if I can't even complete that, then what am I going to do with
that? Why
are
you putting the time in, Scott? Come on.
I know. Life, basically.
It's definitely not work.
Bad excuse.
That was an unfair comment, Scott.
Accused me of alcoholism last week.
No, like as it stands at the moment, it's not my kind of game.
Yeah. It's a time of life thing as well, I think. I mean, there was a time, completely different sort of game, but I would play Football Manager for hours on
that. Oh, God, if I was a student, I'd be playing No Man's Sky now.
Yeah. But obviously, it's not just young people who play it, but I think you have to have space in your life. Space in your life. That was a pun. Didn't even mean it. Good.
If I was retired.
Yeah. Well, you may be sooner than you think, so.
Not that old.
Is that a threat? They have already said that they're going to add stuff, so they're adding a scan for other players feature, so you can. To help you find other people that
then you can't see them
flying around. Or supposedly you will be able to.
Okay.
And there's lots of species you can find, as Scott mentioned.
It's an interesting one to end on, though. I heard it described as the anti-Pokemon Go, because it has an almost infinite amount of actual content, but it's antisocial.
Right.
Pokemon Go, like, it's such a simple game, but you meet real people in the real
world.
Who
is going to port Pokemon Go into the No Man's Sky world?
That'd be amazing.
That would get Chris playing.
Yeah.
Do we think, just briefly, gaming is kind of a golden age, isn't it? I mean, it seems like every couple of weeks there is a huge release that's generating loads of hype and excitement. We've got Gamescom next week.
The thing about Gamescom that sort of caught my eye is that Sony released their list of games that they're debuting at Gamescom. and about six of them are VR titles. So I think we're finally getting there with VR. But what I feel like we've come a long way from when a launch title used to be like Echo the Dolphin on the like Sega Saturn.
Mega Drive.
Yeah, on the Mega Drive. Yeah. Or like that weird fireworks game that we had on PlayStation 1 that I can't remember the name of. And now
Rapper the Rapper, that was pretty near the start of PlayStation 1. That's a great game.
Rapper the Rapper's a good game.
Yeah, that is a good game. And now we've got like the launch titles for PlayStation VR as things like Arkham Asylum, which is like a pretty well-rounded game. So I thought that we've come quite a long way there.
Yeah.
Technology.
All the other media are basically in trouble, and games just keeps on.
Gaming, it's just more accessible and more people are into it, and it's less. I can't think of the word.
I think from an economic point of view, you don't show a game to a room full of people. You need your own personal copy, usually, of a game, and it's very difficult to copy a game.
That's the funny thing. It's very difficult to stream or to pirate,
yeah.
Which is why it seems to be doing well, whereas music...
Actually, for the reasons that's always the case, which is there's something unique. Everyone's own experience of playing a game is their own experience, and they're very complex, unique, and the good ones are really well-crafted things. And they're hard to steal, basically. But also, people are happy to pay for them because they get, you know, 40 hours is quite a good investment in the game. So I think we've kind of got the answer to this, but let's go around the room. No Man's Sky or Yes Man's Sky? David Price.
Yes Man's Sky.
Scott Carey.
Yes Man's Sky.
Chris Martin.
No Man's Sky.
Excellent. I don't like to have consensus.
I thought you guys didn't like it.
No, I think
yes.
I think it's a wonderful idea. I think
totally
it's a brilliant game. I'm just not going to play it.
And I haven't got a PC.
Oh yeah,
sucks.
On that bombshell, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about smart banking. Bank you, India. Bank you, terror. Bank you, disillusionment. Scott Carey. Why should we all be excited about smart banking?
I feel like, first off, we should pull the curtain back a little bit here and say that this segment during pre-production was called the boring banking section.
Boring banking section.
Look forward to this section, listener. So there was a report that came out from the government today that's been 2 years in the making, where they're going to try and bring banking up to date. So
the CMA's Open Banking Report?
That is the name of the report, yeah. It's lengthy, as government reports tend to be, especially ones that take 2 years. But the headline is that they're going to, by 2018, put in place something called the Open Banking Programme, which will basically force banks to start sharing data with each other and with consumers a little bit better. So I think the easiest way for me to position this is... when TfL started releasing all of their data in an open way, it led to things like CityMapper, right, and all of those useful apps now that bring together all the different streams of useful transport data so that you can look at different options without having to manually go through all the different possible routes.
Yeah.
So it does the work for you. So what they're hoping is that now fintech companies or maybe the government themselves will design an app where you could have all of your banking... So you could have your current account on there, you could have your insurance on there, you could have your mortgage on there, and you can have a view of all of your finances in a single place.
Competing products?
So you could then also start to switch. They hope you could switch your bank easier and also start to maybe have one product with one bank and another product with a better bank, because you're getting a better deal with them, and you don't have to be as locked in.
And presumably then, so like... A couple of banks have done this as a service, but, you know, if you have a current account that's in overdraft and you have some savings and you have a mortgage and you have a loan and you have a credit card,
yeah,
the best place for you to have all of that money is to pay off your debts as much as possible rather than having savings. So what you want is automatically, across multiple accounts with multiple different organisations, the money to move so that you're paying the least interest,
yes,
basically.
Yeah. And they want to make that easier and for it to be more transparent. So you... they're going to force banks to publish their sort of rates more, so you can see whether you can get a better deal elsewhere or whether you're getting a bad deal at your current bank, and encourage switching more, so to make it more consumer friendly.
And that needs to happen almost algorithmically, I think, because human beings are just not going to spend the time researching these things. I was, it's funny because I'm in the process of applying for a mortgage, and it's such an opaque, weird business.
Yeah.
And getting to speak to a human is very difficult. And that I was thinking about this report. It's what would be good for consumers is more openness, more understanding, you know. But it has to be kind of done by machine learning, because what it's going to mean in practice is fewer humans with whom to interact, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the mortgage broker isn't going to exist. I mean, that's not a new idea.
No.
It's unlikely they're going to exist. It's not going to be a job for someone to just call around all the different banks and things like that.
No, because hopefully all that information will be available via APIs, and you can start to sort of filter them down to something that actually suits you using technology. I think the aim here, or companies will definitely start to take advantage of doing things like compare your bank or compare your mortgage. The way that we've got to do flights now and hotels and insurance.
And credit cards. So, broadly speaking, then, it sounds like there's some good in here. What do the banks think about it, do you think?
Well, the banks are probably quite concerned, because they've been able to keep people locked in. People don't switch.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Very often, because they make it as difficult as possible, so they can hold on to customers quite easily. So I think they're going to now have to embrace technology themselves. They're going to have to do what I think a lot of insurance companies are doing and make banking with them a consumer-friendly proposition. So good mobile apps, no downtime with their technology. They have to be a little bit more friendly with their rates, and not because they're going to have to compete more openly with the others.
Does it mean new banks potentially? I mean, that's something you've spoken about before.
Yeah, I mean, new banks are probably licking their lips at this point, because the hardest thing for them to do is to convince people to switch, because people are worried about the consequences, or the potential consequences, of going from a big established name with trust
to a small enough to fail bank.
But if this will open up the possibility to switch a lot easier. So if they can insure people, or like assure people enough, and also then make it easy enough to switch and offer a proposition that is fundamentally more consumer friendly than what the big banks offer, then they've got a good opportunity to try and break into the market a little bit better.
Because it actually, you know, we talked about this before. You talked about this before. In order to be a bank in the UK, it's pretty stringent. You have to pass quite a lot of, you have to have a lot of cash, basically.
Yeah, they've made it easier in the last sort of 5 years. So banks now, if they do their paperwork right and have a certain, and have less than 5 million worth of capital, which you can probably fund. I mean, you look at the funding of tech companies now, and that's sort of chump change, really. You can get up and running in 18 months. I think Mondo Bank got up and running in 18 months, Tandem similar. Atom took about 2 years, but they were a real early starter. So, yeah, it's stringent, and you'd want it to be stringent, but the barriers to entry are coming down massively.
Wow. So let's widen it up a little bit. David, Chris, You know, what's your experience of banking? Does this sound like the sort of thing that will be good for you, do you think?
Yeah, it sounds brilliant. I'm the classic mug. I never switch. I'm still on the same bank account that I had when I was 18, when I first went to university. Yeah, the classic, too. You know, snare you in with some student offer for about 50 quid and then you stay with them for
Here's a nice piece of rope, wrap it around your neck.
But what would work for
HMV
me
HMV
is...
vouchers.
I think it was.
Was it actually?
I predated that. I think it was like a money box thing.
The NatWest pigs.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
But you know how when you use Google Maps and you use it and you're following a route and then every now and then it'll go alternate route, save 6 minutes, and all you have to do is click yes. In fact, these days, I think it just automatically does
it. Yeah,
but if there was a preferably a Google or Apple made app, really, really reputable app that you just put in all your banking details in, and then, you know, once every 3 weeks or something, it would say, oh, we recommend that you switch this much money to this account, and it will save you an estimated this much over the next 6 months.
I think the smart banks will start doing that, actually, because they do employ a lot of developers. And yeah, you know, they've got the time and the capital to see this change come in.
But it has to be an independent body, doesn't it?
Yeah, possibly.
That's the thing. It has to be an umbrella app that looks at all of them.
Yeah.
And then just makes it really simple. Just literally you have to press OK. And it would say, you know, this is how much money we think you'll save. And it still has our Apple seal of approval. It's still a safe bank. So there, click yes. And it does it all for you. And then that way, that's the only way that I'm ever going to switch to
a different account. Then you need the card in your wallet to just be able to be used.
Your phone could be the card, couldn't it?
Well, I mean, I've just got a Mondo card, which Scott mentioned briefly, which is kind of a different way of banking. So it's, at the moment, they don't have their full banking license, so it's still kind of in beta.
Is it a prepaid Master?
It's a prepaid Master card, so you don't have a proper bank account, you just have an app on your iPhone. Android's coming in September, where you top up the card from your actual bank account and then you can use the card just like any other. But it's like, it's all the kind of the app analytics and stuff that's way better than any other banking app that I've seen. So as soon as you've done a transaction, it'll pop up on the app, your balance will change instantly. It'll break down all your spending into different categories and stuff like that. You can, like, if you need to, if you lose it or whatever, you can disable the card yourself. You don't need to ring up them and go, oh, I lost it, you know, go through all that hassle. You can do that from the app yourself, and it is instantaneous.
Which is kind of how it should be, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's all pretty exciting, really.
So there's a convenience side for customers. I was wondering about the other side of this, Scott. The other side of open data, which is our own data. And again, not to talk about myself, but this is very current. Going through a mortgage application process, a human being somewhere in the chain misread my wage slip and where it says season ticket loan, presuming that was a student loan, and just blanket denied kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fine because it takes a load of phone calls, but you can get around it. But I was saying to the person I was speaking to, who wasn't even at the bank, it was a mortgage broker, why can't they just, and it's my bank as well, weirdly, it's my actual bank, why can't they just take a credit report? I'll pay for it myself. I'll give them a credit report so they can see all my debts. And it's because it's just so inconvenient to have to do all this. And that, so I'm comfortable with the idea of sharing my financial data with financial institutions. Do we think that's what's going to happen? Or, because there's also the other side where people sometimes aren't. They want privacy around.
So they will. The report makes it very clear that you will have to give permission.
Right.
So basically, if you want to take advantage of the switching capabilities and having a single app where you can see all your finances, you're going to have to give them permission to access your data and share it around between the different organisations, because that's the only way that they can all.
But every other aspect of this tells us people will do that.
Yeah,
I'll do that. And efficiency,
You either have to. Yeah, it depends on your personal preference. But I think the advantages of saying yes, basically, to them taking your data are there. So you just get on with it. And I think people are more and more happy to do that. There obviously will be people that don't like it and they don't have to do it and they don't have to take advantage of it. And they can just stay with their bank like they have for the last three, four decades.
Okay, cool. This actually... The boring banking segment turned out to be quite interesting. Thrilling.
Thrilling, even.
Yeah, okay, well, let's go around the room. Banks a million, or you absolute banker?
Banks a Million.
Scott Carey.
Banks a Million.
Banks a Million.
Oh, consensus. Oh, but I think it's right. Good. Good job, Scott. Okay, we'll take a very small break, and then when we come back, we'll be talking emoji. Smile. Angry. Smile. Aubergine. Smile. Gun. David Price, what has got you all riled up about emoji? You okay, hun?
Before we move on to that, did you know that the aubergine is not normally quite as phallic as it is on Apple systems?
It's pretty phallic on Android as well.
But it's not, yeah. But it's an interesting point because, and this relates to what I'm about to talk about, the emoji display is, it varies according to the company that's running the operating system. And this week, Apple has decided that it's going to display the gun emoji that you mentioned differently. It's going to display as a water pistol for sort of unofficially political reasons. And this is important because Apple doesn't actually own the emoji itself, which is...
There's a central body, isn't there?
Yeah, the Unicode emoji. Consortium.
Oh, I wish they had a better name than that.
Unicorn Consortium.
That's the sort of thing that your website would... you love your unicorns, don't you?
Yes, yeah, unfortunately we do, yeah.
So it's sort of annoying. This in itself hasn't got me particularly riled up. It's the response of some other people. But they've decided that when you on iOS 10, and this is coming on the fourth beta of iOS 10, when you try and send a gun emoji, then it will display on your phone as a water pistol. And anybody else that's on iOS 10, beta 4 or later, it will also display as a water pistol. But the actual Unicode code is unchanged. So that will just depend on...
So there is a possibility, I'm just going to do this in audio for the listeners, but there's a possibility that you're sending... And the receiver is getting...
Yeah, this is really important. So the example people give is that you send a playful text to your friend at school and you say, tomorrow afternoon in the park, bring... And then the emoji or the water pistol because you want to have a water pistol. And they get a gun. Yeah. And they think, you know...
And they take it literally, turn up, shoot you.
Yeah, tooled up.
With you're there squirting a water pistol. They're firing lead into your face. Yeah, that is
like,
not
like
a good
the person
situation.
In the Untouchables.
The same thing could happen with the aubergine. To be fair, I mean, you could be going on a date and you could send a nice, you know, aubergine, and a young lady or man, depending on your gender and sexuality, could
get a less
interpret that
aubergine
as a cookery thing, and they could think, "Oh, we're having." Eggplant and parmesan.
Oh, delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was looking through all the different emoji to prepare for this. And it's amazing how different some of them are. My favourite set is by a company called Emoji One, who do sort of open source emoji that you can license. And they're much better in almost every respect. But yeah, this gun thing is sort of annoying in a way because... Well, for one thing, Windows used to have a toy gun. It wasn't a water pistol.
Now it's actually quite a fearsome-looking gun.
Yeah, and they did that specifically for the reasons you say, because it was supposed to be standardised. Mm. The Unicode thing, and the whole point of Unicode, is to have a cross-platform standard that would always be the same, and that symbols would come up in, you know, and people could vary it aesthetically, but the message is supposed to be the same. And what Apple is doing is... as I said, for political reasons.
What are those political reasons? Because Apple likes water pistols.
It doesn't like gun violence.
Right.
Which
maybe
is a
the
sort
eye
of...
pistol is the next big thing.
The eye pistol.
The eye pistol.
A connected water pistol. I think this is the next thing after the Apple.
I was thinking eye pistol was some sort of what do you call it? You meant something. Anyway, I thought you meant an innuendo.
Do you think Scott was referring to a part of his anatomy?
I think possibly I did.
Wow.
Yeah, so basically, as a stand against the repeated and horrifying gun violence in Apple's home nation of America, then they've sort of set out their standard, and they said, we are pro-gun control. And you know, we're talking about this as if it's obvious. Mm. Everybody would be against gun slayings, and everybody is, but not everybody in America is against gun control.
Well, and to use your example from before, you know, it might help because, you know, a couple of lads get together and message each other and go, hey, let's go to the school and shoot everybody with our emoji for gun. And, all right, one of them turns up with a gun, but the other guy turns up with a water pistol.
Well, that's like Donald Trump's thing, though, isn't it? He says that it's better if there are more people with guns.
Right.
Because he's saying, well, when the people came to shoot everybody, what if there were other people with guns to shoot back? Wouldn't that be better?
Only works if the guns get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, or if the guns, if they're so good at shooting that they shoot each other's bullets out of the air, and thus nobody gets shot.
It's a solution.
That's unusual.
It might not be the easiest solution. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so I've been thinking about this a bit this week, and we used to call this kind of thing gesture politics, and these days in the sort of Twitter age, the phrase that gets used is virtue signalling. Both of which phrases have been applied to things that are actually basically a good thing. I think the intentions are good. I think, as they'd say, Apple is coming from a place of love here, but it's a very ill-advised move in my mind, partly because of the confusion, partly because it's not Apple's place to do this. Apple does not own emojis. It's just up to Apple how it displays emojis. It's not supposed to
change. Anyone that owns the alphabet, I suppose.
Well, exactly. What if it decided to change every A to a B?
Or HTML, actually, because, you know, there was that time, you and I can both remember a time when there was kind of a push to settle on using the same tags for bold copy on a page or something like that, because it was confusing, because people were using different types of code. And emoji is a centralized thing for exactly that reason, so people can use it to communicate and not have that thing of sending what looks like a very straight message from one device and turns out being lewd or angry.
It can genuinely change the, you know, even in those small ways, it can change the tone. Mm. And this is a huge change, and a huge, and as I said, politically motivated change. I did contact Apple. There is no official line on this. They have not made a statement about it reflecting anything to do towards gun control, but it seems like it is almost certainly for that reason. It would be very strange to do it for any other reason.
If it's for that reason, why would they not have a line on it? It's really,
that's,
really
that's
strange.
Exactly what I said to them. I said, if it's a political gesture, what's the point of having a political gesture if you don't say it?
No.
But I guess because it's so controversial.
But you could do something else. I mean, it's quite subtle, I suppose, but it's subtle, but it can lead to confusion. Yeah. Because if it really was that, you could do something like, you know, have a gun, but put a cross through it or something. Well, what, so it's still the same thing.
They could have just hidden it. That's what they do. Right. Is they should have just taken it out of the keyboard, the iOS keyboard, and then people would be able to still send them if they wanted to by copying and pasting from somebody else's message. And if somebody sent a gun to you, which you'd probably want to know about, it would display as a gun because that's what it is. Mm. But then it would still discourage people. Because the idea is that people are getting desensitized. They're getting used to the idea of a gun being a normal object because they see it as just an emoji.
And an aubergine.
And an aubergine, which can be just as harmful to the health if used in the way you have in mind. But there's still the
lightly frying with some salt and pepper. But
that can be unhelpful. There's still the knife. There's still a sort of sword. There's still a bomb. There's still a cigarette. There's still all the alcoholic drinks. There's still a baseball bat. There are many, many. There's a sort of fist punching in the face. There is a poo with eyes. That, you know, there are many unsavoury things in the emoji alphabet. Well, yeah, in the world as well. It's like, what, are we not allowed to write about guns now? What, are they going to start making so that if you write the word G-U-N, then it will change flower. It to flower?
That'd be great.
It's absurd. I love Apple's political stances, but as one of our colleagues said to me earlier in the week, I said that Apple was a left-wing company, but it really is on social issues and making stands, doing symbolic gestures. But when it actually counts, it really isn't. You know, economically, for example, it's an international corporation that employs very low-paid, outsourced manufacturing companies, and it's sort of a taste in the mouth that Apple is.
It's a bit smug, isn't it?
It is a bit smug.
It's a bit Silicon Valley.
It really is. This is only in beta, though. That's what I want to stress.
Okay.
I hope that when iOS 10 comes out finally, it will have the gun.
Well, to be fair, since they started doing public beta, they have made changes that reflect public.
Yeah.
Kind of the idea, isn't it? I guess.
which is unusual for Apple. It's quite a significant thing that Steve Cook's brought in.
Tim Cook.
Steve.
Jobs.
Well,
I tell you what they should do is that they should. All right, so for iOS 10, the final version, they should just hide the gun. That's fine. I can see where they're coming from. Hide the gun in the keyboard and then lobby the Unicode Consortium to create an emoji for a water pistol. And that could be a new thing.
Mm.
And then encourage other people to follow them. But you can't change a gun into a water pistol because it's not the same thing.
Do you guys have strong feelings about this?
I'm just annoyed that the amount of pop-up shops that sell emoji cushions and the fact that you can no longer do the one from MSN Messenger, which was a colon and followed by an S.
What did that do?
Which is like a wavy mouth.
What did it signify?
Kind of confusion type, like, thing.
There is a lack of a confused emoji, and the MSN one used to be very solid.
It was very popular with me and my friends.
It may well be coming. There is a regular drip of new emoji, isn't there?
Yeah. It's quite a subtle facial expression confusion, so it's difficult to put it into emoji form.
Just send an aubergine. If in doubt, that's what we do on Slack.
My dad uses this one that's like a sort of Richter's grin. And obviously on his phone, it just looks like a sort of cheeky grin. But actually, its name is something like angry or something like that.
Oh, is that where he's like baring his teeth?
Yeah.
People use that for all sorts of things. I tend to use that for if something's cringing.
Yeah.
But...
So he'll just use it in general on every message. And it's just interesting because your grandma's died. Grin. No. That's not the case. But it is still the case that those subtle differences, the subtle aesthetic differences, can mean the tone of a message changes between different platforms. Mm-hmm. And I think that is slowly but surely being whittled away, but it still can be quite amusing.
Well, I mentioned Emoji One. What I would most like is for everybody to adopt their universal emoji, because they're really good, and B, because then they would be universal. And their tiger has a little wry sort of sideways smile. He's really cute. Really good tiger.
Start a petition.
Well, let's do it. Good. Excellent. Okay. Well, let's just quickly go around the room. Shot through the heart or the golden shot? David Price.
Which one is the bad?
Shot through the heart.
Yeah, you don't want to have a shot through the heart.
Even with a water pistol.
But I do like that song. Mm. Shot through the heart.
Scott Carey.
Yeah, shot through the heart.
Chris Martin.
Confused face.
Confused face. An excellent point on which to end this week's edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Do get in touch to let us know your thoughts and opinions and to shake us down for cash. Or indeed, if you're interested in advertising, you can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. We will be back next week with more informed and uninformed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. So until then, find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and all the other places from which you get your noise. Don't forget to subscribe, review us, and tell your friends. Until then, say goodbye, team.
Goodbye. See ya.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.